Well, good morning. Welcome to the United States Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit. Our first case for the day is Watkins versus Experian, number 25-1250. And hear from the appellant.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court.
Good morning.
My name is Levy Eidelman. I'm here from the Consumer Justice Law Firm on behalf of plaintiff appellant, Mr. Cole Watkins. I'd like to reserve 4 minutes time for rebuttal.
How much?
4 minutes.
That'll be granted.
Your Honor. Mr. Watkins had a child support account that's been paid and closed in May of 2017. For years, that's not posed an issue, but suddenly, about 4 years later, delinquency notations began appearing in that account. Despite submitting 18 disputes to Experian, Experian refused to remove or modify any information. Experian merely parroted whatever the child support agency provided to it and considered the matter settled. Mr. Watkins is not satisfied with that, and that's why he brought suit. With respect to the 18 disputes, 11 of those, Experian did some investigation. In other words, it sent an ACDV, that's an automatic credit dispute verification, essentially a computer page to the child support agency. Child support agency responded with verifying information, occasionally updating various dates, but the court disputed items were not remedied. Experian received that ACDV response and reported that. For the another 7 disputes, Experian did not investigate at all. Experian instead decided that those disputes were, quote,
I think we know the facts here. Maybe we can just dig right in. It seems to me there are three things here: reasonable procedures, reasonable reinvestigation, and then there's the willfulness too, which I guess we can get to if we have extra time. Maybe you can focus a little bit on reasonable procedures. That's one of your claims.
Right. So there are a couple of aspects here that we contend are unreasonable. At least a jury may find it unreasonable. For example, not investigating disputes at all. There is no kind of exception for that in the FCRA. Sure, a consumer must send a dispute to Experian, not through other entities indirectly, but there's no evidence here that a plaintiff did not send the disputes in the sense that he was not heavily involved in sending those. In fact, if you look at the discarded disputes, that's at the record, it's over 90 pages between JA 225 and 318, over 90 pages of disputes where his Social Security card appears, I believe, 7 times, or his driver's license copy 13 times. He has notations, personal scribbles. He's marked like, look here, look there. He is highlighted, although the highlighting is not very evident from the record due to the copying. But he's written in his social and his name. He was heavily involved with the disputes. These are not consumer disputes. It's hard to say that anybody downloading any template and customizing it would ever be considered a consumer dispute for FCRA purposes. So that's a real stretch to say that.
Customizing it and maybe signing it, right? But I mean, what about all the indicia that he did not personally prepare these or send them from his home zip code?
So I would respectfully disagree that there are such indicia. There is some testimony that his sister may have placed in the mailbox, or a relative of his, a friend of his, have helped him with mailing it.
And they're signed by someone who purports to be an attorney in fact, who is not named, and he admits that he used some unknown woman to assist.
So he did use some unknown woman to assist. There's no other signatures in the disputes. Like, nobody else claimed it. So when he writes attorney in fact, let me give some backstory to that. So Experian's suspicious mail letter, when they send it, when they say, oh, it's suspicious, we're not going to investigate, and they write there, it's also actually in their CFPB complaint responses, where they write, oh, we'll accept a letter from an attorney. Like, that's sufficient for our purposes. So Mr. Watkins, who's a truck driver, sitting there like, oh, you need like something to say that I'm an attorney. How do I represent myself? So then from then on in the disputes, he writes attorney in fact for Mr. Cole Watkins, right? We're talking about ordinary consumers who are trying to, get Experian to fix it unsuccessfully. So they're doing everything they're being told in their minds reasonably.
Let me ask you about the 11 disputes that were investigated. What was Experian supposed to do when, I assume that you don't contest that there, it was fine, at least as a starting point, to use the automated system to reach out to the child support agency, right? And get a response as a starting point. Can we agree with that?
Yeah, ECDVs can be reasonable depending on the dispute, you know, depending on how many supporting documents are provided with it, or how the conflict, the information is, how illogical it may be. The district court found there, illogicalities in the reporting. Like, there's no way this reporting could be accurate. And therefore, an ACDV by itself would not suffice for those disputes. Everybody agrees that the investigation must be proportionate to the dispute. So a simple dispute, oh, I don't owe $10,000, I owe $5,000, I already paid, right? Okay, so they confirm, they send an ACDV to the furnisher, confirm that information, that probably should be sufficient. But what if he attaches, payment, a proof of payment, right? And with a date on it, and the furnisher says, no, he didn't pay. Okay, that's a little bit, questionable. Maybe they should do something more. Maybe they should call them and ask them, what about the attachment? So it really depends on the dispute. Here, one of the suspicious disputes not investigated with, that was an envelope with 16 pages. It had a Florida postmark of the Florida zip code, which, by the way, is Disney World. So, imagine somebody at Disney World, but he's sending the dispute for correcting his credit that he's trying to do for 2 years. That's over 16 pages, and Experian disregarded it because it has a super thin mail policy that says that it doesn't even have to open the mail and can just discard it without any investigation, based only on the envelope. And note, the envelope has a return address of Mr. Watkins. So he wrote his return address in one corner, but because it was postmarked from somewhere else in the other corner by the post office, that caused Experian to decide we don't need to open the envelope.
Where in the appendix are you looking at that 12-page document?
So that's a 265 to 284. That's a 16-page dispute. Includes 11 pages of the payment history on the account, the complete payment history from the inception 2003. Includes a letter from New York City Social Services, the department that deals directly with the child support, that confirms the account's been closed. It's been paid, last payment since 2017. So it was closed since 2017. Experian never opened it. There was obviously, photocopies of his driver's license and other his digital signature and very detailed notice in the dispute and in his letter. Experian didn't open the envelope because the postmark, zip code was not identical with what they had on file for the address for Mr. Watkins.
It seems like you concede in your briefing, like on page 14 of your brief, that Experian's required to report the information that was provided it from the agency. Isn't there some logical force to their argument that we would be held liable if we didn't report this? Do you agree?
If we agree with the Sixth Circuit's Berry decision, then that would carry weight. We don't have to. This court doesn't need to do that. But if it does, there is some weight to that.
Well, don't we put them in a tough spot? I mean, they've got information. They've got to do something with it.
So I'd imagine, I'm not going to tell Experian how to report it to make it more accurate, but there are ways to make it more accurate. For example, they can say, account obsolete, account unverifiable, mandatory reporting pursuant to 1681S1. Then third parties can look at it. Like, he tried to apply for the truck. The salesman looked at him like, there's no way you get approved for that, this delinquency in the child support. He could have said, look, even Experian says they can't verify this. This is like, they just have to include it. So that does make a difference. If we're looking for them.
So I actually have a question on this point, because there is sort of an assumption really on both sides and in the briefs and other opinions that the child support information or facts or questions had to be posted. But I'm curious how you would define the statutory term information, because regardless of notwithstanding and what that means, 1681S-1 requires information on the failure of the consumer to pay overdue support. So what does any information include?
Right. And that's, I think, kind of the issue that the Berry Court struggled with. Our frontline, without forfeiting or waiving any arguments, our frontline position is that information about the failure to pay means, if it's information about the failure to pay, if it's not, like in this case, it's not information about the failure to pay because that's not true. And the child support knows it and their letters show it. So in that case, it's not even information about the failure to support to pay child support, because it's just not true.
Okay, so I appreciate you taking on the phrase in total. But I see it as potentially there being two separate parts. So any information, and I'm curious about what you just think the word information in general means. And then we could think about the failure, and what's the failure mean? What's information just in general, broadly?
I think the you know, it's going to be the information about the account. It might not be the address of the account, but it's the delinquency information.
But how would you define just the word information?
The G notation that indicates that person is late for a particular month. So those G notations must be.
Does it have to be a true fact? Does it have to be speculation? Is there any limitation on a data point being information?
Right. I would say that it should be applied consistently with the broader principles of the FCRA, like under 1681 EB, that everything must be accurate. So if they receive a dispute that's supported with documentation, with a letter from the same agency saying that the account is closed and paid, at that point, I don't think that the delinquency would be considered information.
Okay, so I was curious just in general about like the dictionary definition or plain meaning of information, but on the separate point of what the information is here, is it your position that the information that was actually supposed to be reported was the fact that there was a flag for the child support or this idea that there was delinquency? Because it seems what happened to me is that Experian posted that there was delinquency. So is the information the delinquency or is the information the fact that there was a flag? Do you know what I'm saying? There's like a distinction. One is because obviously here they don't match up. Normally you would hope that if there's a flag on delinquency for child support, that it indeed was a delinquency. But here it was posted as information when in fact it wasn't actually true. So is the information the fact of the flag or the delinquency itself?
May I respond?
Yes, by all means, sure.
So I'm not sure I understand the flag point. There's an account status that says paid was in collections and paid, which means satisfied. And then there are the particular monthly notations that say, you know, collection or no data or paid or whatever it is. So that's all the information there is in the account. So
I guess just to flag, if I could just to flag for you for rebuttal, and I'm going to ask counsel on the other side this too. I guess I'm just curious about whether we need to unpack more the assumption that the information, the delinquency or the alleged delinquency had to be posted in the first place and whether it actually falls within the statutory mandate here. So I'd be curious on rebuttal if you have any more thoughts about exactly what the category of information includes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. We'll hear from Appelli.
May it please the court, Nathaniel Garrett for Experian. Judge Massa, let me start with your question. So what was challenged in this case, in the complaint and the summary judgment, was four collection notations. So you have the child support agency sends us sort of global information about the account. What is the status? But then they have month-to-month notifications about the status of the account. What was challenged here are four notifications for four specific months where they reported that the account was in collections. So in our view, that is information about the failure to pay overdue child support. Any information, I think, probably includes the information necessary for a creditor to understand the context of the account. So it likely does include, you know, the status of the account, the sort of global information. But here what's challenged is the collection accounts, which we think falls within statute.
Okay, but when I look up just plain old dictionary definitions of information, sort of separate and apart from this particular statutory context, it uses terms like facts and data. And it doesn't seem like facts and data were actually what was reported here because it was false. So I guess my question is, like, does information necessarily mean only true data? Because otherwise, essentially what we're sort of finding is that Congress actually is requiring and mandating that consumer reporting agencies report falsehood. Is that true?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I mean, I think what the purpose of the statute was to say, look, if a child support agency tells you, Experian, that somebody has a failure to pay, you have to report that. And I think it would grossly undermine that purpose if what that meant is only if the child support agency is right. Then it becomes like every other account where we have to determine whether it's factually accurate or not.
Well, and that was, again, why I was asking your friend on the other side what the actual information is. Because if the information is that there was, and I'm using the word flag, but that there was some concern about the data, then that would fall within the category. If the information is the fact of the delinquency itself, then I guess I just have concerns that we're saying Congress is requiring.
I think our position is absolutely Congress wanted credit reporting agencies to report if somebody was late on a payment or if that payment had been sent to collections, because they want to put pressure on individuals required to pay child support. And if they fail to do so, they want that reported. Now, there's a separate question about what do you do when the agency may be wrong. But I think at the front end, they certainly want to capture collections accounts.
Can I just ask you, maybe we can have some common ground here. Do you agree that Watkins' credit report was inaccurate?
I think for purposes of this argument, I'm happy to.
Okay. I wonder about, would you also agree that they were inconsistent? I'm looking particularly at pages in your appendix, actually on the statement of undisputed facts. I mean, I'm looking at, for instance, 2021, the 2021 row. This is page 48 and 49. It seems resolved and now it's not. It seems a little inconsistent to me.
Yeah, I think, I think
there's charts here.
I think that's a fair instinct, Your Honor. The problem is these are confusing accounts, right? You could have multiple children on the account. We are sending his dispute and all the information we have on the dispute to State Department of Enforcement, which, by the way, is different from the agency he got a letter from. The letter was from the city local office. The state agency, which is the one that's responsible for enforcing these, we're sending this information to them. We're sending the materials he sends us. And every time they're saying, no, this is correct. Now, I think standing here in the Third Circuit and thinking about it like a lawyer, I think I understand the instinct to say these seem inconsistent, but we have somebody who's not a trained lawyer receiving these materials and saying to the state, this person is saying this is incorrect. And they're saying, no, it's actually correct. And every month, as my opposing counsel conceded, not just saying it's correct, but then updating it with new information and saying this account is changing. I think it's hard for a person.
Pause for a second and sure. Just look at page 48 of the sure. Joint appendix. This is the matrix. And it says, and my child support enforcement, et cetera. And to the right of that, at the top, it says status, March 2023, paid, comma, closed.
Correct.
Is that? Okay. And then you look down at the first row of the matrix and it says a C. And the C means collections, right?
Correct.
So how is that, just looking at this image, how is that consistent?
Because what they were reporting to us was the account was closed but had been in collections for certain months.
In the last reported month, it was in collections and then it was closed and there's no notation about the collections having been satisfied.
Well, but this is in I believe this is in September, Your Honor. So they're saying in previous months it was in collection.
Well, it says status March 2023, and then it shows a C it says, for March 2023.
I see, yeah. Right, so they were telling us, look, this has been closed, it's satisfied, but it was in collections in the past.
Okay, I mean, I guess what I'm trying to get at here is isn't there something questionable about just this snapshot in time?
I think there is something questionable, and I'm conceding that, Your Honor. But I'm also saying that's why we were sending these questions to the state and saying, explain this to us. And they said, no, you're correct. And so the question is, what do we do, right?
So you sent the questions to the state when Mr. Watkins asked you to, right?
Correct.
But there's a preliminary step, which is the assuring reasonable accuracy or maximum possible right. accuracy before the reinvestigation
right.
point, right? So would this would this image that we just looked at together trigger some action by Experian?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I think courts have pretty regularly held that unless there's a dispute, that creditors are allowed to trust generally reliable sources of information. And I think the state is a reliable source of information. Now, I think we had to report this. The question is, do we then supplement it with something else? And so what do we supplement it with? That's what I haven't still quite gotten the answer to. I mean, Barry, I think quite correctly says, no, if there's information about an arrearage, you have to report it. They allow the possibility that in that case, for example, we also had to report a court order, because in that case, maybe he was late, but the court order had abated it. What I understand from appellant's brief is what we should have reported is this was wrong. I think that's a problem under 6081S. I think it's a problem if CRAs have to say, this is what the agency has reported to us, but we don't trust it. I don't think 1681.
Well, how about just an asterisk? There's something funny going on here. We're looking into it. I mean, something so that the person or the company that receives this credit report, it doesn't take it
well,
to
they
be
were,
absolutely.
They were aware we'd looked into it. I mean, we do know when an account has been disputed.
At that point in March 2023, there was a notation of that dispute?
It would have said on his credit report that there had been disputes about the account.
Yeah, really the procedural posture summary judgment. We don't have a trial record here. So there, you know, we're in a different posture altogether. It's just I just thought I'd point that out.
Yeah.
That, you know, we're talking about a record that we can't all agree upon.
Well, that's fair.
What your obligation would be.
So maybe let me turn to willfulness, because I think that is an issue that can be resolved on summary judgment.
Okay.
And I think the two issues on willfulness is one, what were our obligations here in light of 1681 S1?
Right.
I think Barry says, you know, at the very least at this time, it wasn't willful for us to follow what we thought the law required, which is we have to report this. Then the second issue, and this is actually maybe the most important issue lurking in the case, honestly, for credit reporting, is this issue about the third party disputes. The reason it's so important, and maybe it's helpful to take a step back, probably about 25 to 30% of the disputes that CRAs receive are from for-profit credit reporting organizations. And what happens is these are for-profit companies that sign people up and say, you pay us depending on the number of accounts we're able to get off your credit report. And this is just background, but I'm raising it just so the court understands how important this issue is. And what will happen is they'll say, you'll see this from some of the disputes in the record. They send out these sort of mass, anything that's negative, they challenge it on a bunch of grounds. And it forces us to, you know, expend resources on accounts that are legitimate, including in this case. You'll see he repeatedly challenged this Bank of America account saying it was fraudulent when there's no mention of it here. What happens is these arrive in thousands and thousands of letters at the same time that all look the same. The counsel was saying we don't read them. What we do is we sample some of them. Show, look, we just got 10,000 letters from North Houston. And we open some of them and say, look, they're all the same. They're all these mass-generated letters. And so in that case, what we do is we contact the individual and say, if you really want to dispute this with us directly, let us know. We'll look into it. But the concern I have, Your Honor, is there are so many of these, and they're frankly often so illegitimate that requiring us to process these would dramatically change the way we're able to spend time on disputes from consumers. That's all I'll say. I think it's an important issue. So I don't think we were willful in terms of if these mass generated letters are coming in, contacting the consumer and saying, if you want to dispute with us, let us know. That's what the regulators have told us to do.
I'm sorry, which regulators?
The FTC has said we don't need to process these credit report organization letters. That's in our briefs. So I think on willfulness, there's not a willfulness claim here. And if you agree with us on that, then we have to look at actual damages. And this is the point we tried to make in the brief, which is this case was tried below from complaint through summary judgment as a patent inaccuracy case. And so there really was never developed this theory that Mr. Watkins was injured because we didn't supplement in some way by providing additional information. And so there's just no evidence that he was injured because we didn't supplement. So for example, you know, he talks about a loan, a broker telling him don't apply for a loan for a truck for a business.
That's not enough?
Well, not two reasons, no. One, he said, I would have told you that anyway based on this Bank of America account that's not an issue in this case. That's it. Appendix 394. Mm-hmm. But secondly, because he says, look, if you've got this collection account on there, I'm going to tell you not to apply. And our argument is that had to be on there. Whether as in Barry, we had to supplement that with something. We don't think we did. But if we did, there's no evidence that providing some sort of statement would have led that broker to say, oh, now you're fine. Apply for the truck. That's the issue. This theory was never developed. It was all about I'm emotionally distraught.
And Cortez would allow that, wouldn't it? Our case in Cortez?
In terms of the substantial factor.
Oh, causation, yeah.
Well, not necessarily, Your Honor, because in Philbin, this court said you need to be it needs to be a substantial factor. And the way it defined that was to say, look at traditional tort law. You might have two issues that on their own wouldn't cause injury, but together they do. And so if you're one of these, if the inaccuracy is an issue that it's part of the mix and it causes you not to, or excuse me, causes you to be injured, that's enough. Not fighting that. But here, already he had another account that was a problem where the person said, I wouldn't have told him to go forward the loan anyway. So I think that alone shows it wasn't a substantial factor. But more than that, it was just never developed that if we had supplemented, there would have been any impact.
Do you have anything else? Do you have anything else, counsel?
No, thank you, Your Honors.
All right, thank you, counsel. And we'll hear rebuttal.
So I'll just take a moment to try to make the analogy between this case and Barry a little stronger. On Barry, also, there was extraneous information in the sense there was a state court order that's extraneous information that the child support agency did not have access to. And the court said, you know, you can supplement whatever child support is providing with that other information from the court. Here, you know, like my colleague mentioned, there is the city agency and the state agency. The state agency is reporting to Experian, and maybe that's why his records are not so updated. The city is the most relevant agency, the one dealing with Mr. Watkins on a regular basis. And that's who he's going to for letters and for confirmation that his account's been closed. That's additional information that the state maybe doesn't have. Maybe there's a computer miscommunication between them, whatever the case may be. But the city is the more direct entity. About the inconsistent information within the ACV responses, The crucial point there, because they're brief, they don't really acknowledge it. The crucial point in those ACDV responses and really in the letters from the city child support is that the date of last payment is in May 2017. Without that date of last payment, it's maybe not inconsistent. But if we factor in date of last payment 2017 and also there are no outstanding balances or payments due and the account's been satisfied, that must mean that there cannot be a delinquency since 2017. So that's the crucial point there. I think maybe they gloss over in their brief. On the unreasonable, on the...
Judge Mascot asked you a question at the end. Perhaps you could address what her query was.
Yeah, I think my colleague may have addressed it, but I think the city-state difference on that. In other words, is it information if it's not true? I think the state doesn't have the correct information. So when they're providing child support information to Experian, maybe that's not what S1 had in mind when they said information, because that's not the most up-to-date information. I want to say, well, secondhand, but you know, I don't think there's a super clear record on that. We are, you know, where we are posture-wise.
But just to be clear, your position is just as legal and definitional matter that the term information in a statute would bake into it that it's an actual fact. And like a true piece of data or something, observation, not a total falsehood.
Right, right. And of course, my colleague would say, well, the whole point is that we shouldn't have to investigate whether it's true or not. And that's what S1 is trying to do. But we think it can work consistently with, you know, this EB and I and the requirements that everything be accurate.
And actually on that, just because I didn't ask this question earlier, I mean, are we confident that is the purpose of S1? I mean, S1 obviously wants complete, ready information about child support, but there are other, I mean, this is notwithstanding any other provision in this subchapter. And there are other provisions that are just general exceptions and ways in which sometimes there can be an extenuating or outside circumstance, meaning an otherwise reportable data point doesn't have to come in. So is the only purpose of this provision just that every single last comment anybody has ever made about child support, false or true, has to be posted, or is it narrower?
Yeah, I like Barry and without forfeiting, you know, that's a good approach as well. But I think the approach has to be S1, the purpose is to make sure that credit reporting agents include child support as a category. In other words, that's not a credit item, right? Child support is something else. And Congress said, we have to hold deadbeat dads accountable. We have to include in credit reports this classification of child support payments. That doesn't mean that every particular innovation must be reported. It just means the account must be reported, of course, but assuming everything else is accurate, it must be reported. So that's how we kind of make those congruent with each other. This furnisher is an unreliable furnisher. They have an error rate that's 65 times Wells Fargo. So Wells Fargo, respected financial institution, say what you want, you know, but 65 times worse, not 65%, 7 times worse the industry average when it comes to auto loans. So they're pretty bad, and that makes sense. They kind of have immunity. Nobody can really sue them as a furnisher, being that they're a government arm. So that's all I got. Thank you.
Can I just ask you another question? Your adversary talked about the third-party mail processing system. And it seems that they get tens of thousands of letters from commercial outfits. Is it really unreasonable that what they're doing, it would, as he said, would change the nature of their business if we credit what you're saying?
I think those are good arguments that they can make to a jury, because I think about it, even if they didn't follow their own policy here. Their own policy said don't have to open the mail and only sample them for thin, super thin mail, which they classify as 1 to 2 pages thick. This is 16 pages. They didn't even open it. So something's going on there. You can look at it and say that's negligent.
Okay. Okay, thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement. We thank counsel for their excellent briefing and argument today.